I am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is March 20th, 2011. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's article, 100 UC Irvine faculty protest criminal charges against Muslim students. The article begins, 100 faculty members at the University of California at Irvine, UCI, have called on Orange County District Attorney Tony Rakakis to drop criminal charges against 11 current and former students arrested in February 2010 for disrupting a public speech by Michael Oren, Israel's ambassador to the U.S. on the UCI campus. The district attorney's office announced on February 4th that it was filing misdemeanor charges of conspiracy to disturb a meeting and disturbance of a meeting against the defendants. On videotape that circulated widely on the internet, each defendant can be seen standing up and shouting anti-Israel vitriol at Oren while he was speaking at the UCI Student Center. One of the defendants, Mohammed Mohi Eldin Abdelghani, age 23, who was then president of the Muslim Student Union, the MSU, is also charged with coordinating the disruption several days before the event. If convicted, the defendants face sentences that could include probation with community service or fines up to 6 months in jail. My comment, there is no right more sacred to Americans than the right of free speech. However, if I were the judge, I would not impose the maximum. I would be lenient with those students who are first-time offenders. I would impose a sentence of 6 months of public service to be served in Jerusalem. The article continues. The faculty signatories, who included several chancellors, professors, and seven professors of law, said they were deeply distressed by the district attorney's decision to file criminal charges against the students. My comment. Americans committed to the Constitution of the United States should be deeply distressed that well-educated professors would abandon our most cherished principle and support those who would deny to others the rights that they demand for themselves. The fact that seven of these professors are actually professors of law is what I find most distressing. They have no excuse for taking violations of our Constitution so lightly. They, of all people, should know that what those Muslim students did was not only wrong, but a serious breach of our national principles. The article continues. The students were wrong to prevent a speaker invited to the campus from speaking and being heard, the letter states. My comment, and that is where the letter should have ended. But it wasn't just wrong. Their premeditated actions thrust a knife through the heart of our freedoms. The article continues, and the Muslim Student Union acted inappropriately in coordinating this and misrepresenting its involvement to university officials. My comment. Inappropriately is an understatement. And then they admit that the Muslim Students Union misrepresented its involvement to officials. So obviously, truth is not something that holds any importance for these students. But then again, why would you even expect honesty from people who have no respect for the rights of others and will willingly violate those rights? It continues, but the individual students and the Muslim Student Union were disciplined for this conduct by the university, including the MSU being suspended from being a student organization for a quarter. This is sufficient punishment. My comment. Sufficient punishment isn't determined by a group of rogue professors who do not comprehend the seriousness of the First Amendment violation. It is determined by our laws, which have been enacted by our elected legislatures. It is determined by the district attorneys charged with enforcing that law. The court system is the arbiter of punishment, not University of Irvine professors. Continuing, the MSU was reinstated on campus last month after a 4-month suspension following a university investigation that found the Muslim Council had violated campus codes of conduct for planning and coordinating the disruption. My comment: does anyone really believe that the MSU will admit that what they did was wrong? Does anyone think that they won't do it again if they suffer no significant punishment for what they did? I don't. I think they are proud of the actions they took and would do it again in a heartbeat. The only freedom of speech they respect is their own. The article says, UCI also placed the group on 2 years probation and has ordered members to perform 100 hours of community service. My comment: did you notice that nowhere in their punishment is there any mention of an apology? This article never states that the MSU even offered one. Sounds like I may have had a point earlier. The article continues. The letter also states that use of the criminal justice system would be divisive and would risk undoing the healing process that has occurred on the campus since the event took place. My comment: how would the administration of justice be divisive? Who or what are you claiming would be divided? The only divisiveness I see comes from the Muslim students who refuse to allow freedom of speech to someone with whom they disagreed. How would the administration of justice be responsible for undoing the healing process? Are you claiming that punishment will cause the perpetrators to return to their law-breaking ways? I think that punishment is the best way to increase the likelihood that they won't. The article goes on. The Israeli-Palestinian conflict has sparked critical and often hostile debate at UCI and has caused tense relations between Muslim and Jewish students. John Weiner, a professor of history who signed the letter, said, "These events were very traumatic for the campus last year." My comment: it's too bad Weiner didn't spend more time studying the Constitution when he was earning his history degree. Continuing, there was a lot of debate among faculty, students, and between faculty and the administration about what kind of punishment should there be. Was it too much? Was it not enough? My comment: the amount of punishment, if any, will be determined by a court of law, exactly the way our system was designed to function. It continues, the suspension of the MSU has ended and they've returned to normal campus life this quarter, and it's very important to us that we have a community building process. My comment: from what they have shown us so far, they don't seem to have a particularly big interest in a community building process. From what they have shown us, that normal campus life you refer to will last only as long as you don't bring in anyone who expresses opinions with which the Muslim Students Union disagrees. Continuing, we thought that was well underway, and then the DA has sort of given us potentially a big setback by disrupting this process and throwing us back to the debate over how much punishment is the right amount of punishment. My comment: it is no longer your issue to debate. You decided on the punishment, enforced it for one quarter, and then quickly removed it. Now it is in the hands of the court system. You need to get back to doing what you are supposed to be doing, teaching, and let the court system do what it is supposed to be doing, administering justice. The article goes on. Also a signatory on the petition, UCI School of Law founding dean Erwin Chemerinsky question the wisdom of the district attorney's prosecutorial discretion in this case by saying, criminal prosecution is unnecessary and undesirable. My comment: nice assertion, Erwin. What do you offer to back it up? He said, it sets a dangerous precedent for the unnecessary use of criminal prosecution against student demonstrators. My comment: Erwin, why is it dangerous? That is simply another unsupported assertion. I would argue that it is more dangerous not to, and I will supply a reason. Because without punishment, they will have no reason to stop acting in an unlawful manner. As for unnecessary use of criminal prosecution, that is yet another assertion for which you give no supporting argument. The article continues. On February 9th, Oakland-based Jewish Voice for Peace, whose website says it works to achieve a lasting peace that recognizes the rights of both Israelis and Palestinians for security and self-determination, and that supports the boycott, divest, and sanction movement against Israel, delivered a petition with more than 5,000 signatures denouncing the charges. My comment: well, they certainly sound like an unbiased lot. That description on their website makes it clear that their only interest is in combating Israeli policies. Nothing in that description indicates they have the least concern about freedom of speech. The article continues. The group said members had similarly interrupted a speech by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the Jewish Federation's General Assembly in November without being arrested or criminally charged. My comment: that proves my point. When their unlawful actions go unpunished, they simply continue to break the law. They attempt to deny to others the right to freedom of speech while simultaneously claiming that their right to limit the free speech of others is being prohibited. That is a right I have yet to locate in any document. The article said, the targeting of a group of Muslim American students. My comment: the MSU wasn't targeted because they were Muslims. They were targeted because they violated the law. There is nothing wrong with targeting lawbreakers. That's why we have a judicial system. The article continues, who were already sanctioned and whose organization was already suspended by their university as punishment is unacceptable and will only strengthen Islamophobia. My comment: Islamophobia is defined at dictionary.com as hatred or fear of Muslims or of their politics or culture. My question is, why shouldn't we fear those who attempt to undermine our constitutional rights? Go to any Muslim-dominated country in the world and see if you are allowed freedom of speech. What you will discover is that they will allow you freedom of speech. You will have the freedom to praise Allah, to praise Muhammad, peace be upon him, to praise Islam, and to chant, death to America. The article continues, and attempts to stifle political speech in this country. My comment: how the Jewish Voice for Peace could look at that situation and not be able to see which side was attempting to stifle political speech is mind-boggling. Actually, it isn't so mind-boggling when you understand what it really is. Pure dishonesty. Even the loony professors at UCI admitted that the Muslim students were wrong. The Jewish Voice for Peace couldn't possibly be as blind as they are pretending to be. When someone looks at the color black and swears they only see white, you know there is no use trying to reason with them. Their bias has completely blinded them to reality, and they are willing to lie to defend their position. It is obvious, even to an imbecile, which side is trying to stifle political speech. The article continues, Susan Kang Schroeder, chief of staff for the Orange County District Attorney, said her office would not be swayed by public opinion or special interest groups. My comment: that's called courage. It is a trait that is rarely seen in American politics anymore. Schroeder concludes, the law against the disruption of a meeting has been on the books for 100 years and was litigated at the California Supreme Court, and it is constitutional. We're sworn to uphold and defend the Constitution. You don't have a First Amendment right to shut down other people's right to speak and other people's right to hear. My comment: you wouldn't think a single person in America would have difficulty grasping that last sentence. Yet, as the Jewish Voice for Peace proves, irrational minds will always allow their prejudices to overrule facts and logic. And now we move to the science segment. Today's story: the liver, not the brain, may be the origin of Alzheimer's plaques. Unexpected results from a study could completely alter scientists' ideas about Alzheimer's disease, pointing to the liver instead of the brain as the source of the amyloid that deposits as brain plaques associated with this devastating condition. The findings could offer a relatively simple approach for Alzheimer's prevention and treatment. In the study, scientists used a mouse model for Alzheimer's disease to identify genes that influence the amount of amyloid that accumulates in the brain. They found three genes that protected mice from brain amyloid accumulation and deposition. For each gene, lower expression in the liver protected the mouse brain. One of the genes encodes presenilin, a cell membrane protein believed to contribute to the development of Alzheimer's in humans. This unexpected finding holds promise for the development of new therapies to fight Alzheimer's. This could greatly simplify the challenge of developing therapies and prevention. An estimated 5 million Americans have Alzheimer's disease, including nearly half of people age 85 and older. By the year 2050, the number of people age 65 and over with this disease will range from 11 to 16 million unless science finds a way to prevent or effectively treat it. In addition to the human misery caused by the disease, there is the unfathomable cost. A new report from the Alzheimer's Association shows that in the absence of disease-modifying treatments, the cumulative costs of care for people with Alzheimer's from 2010 to 2050 will exceed $20 trillion. In trying to help solve the Alzheimer's puzzle, scientists have focused their research on naturally occurring inherited differences in neurological disease susceptibility among different mouse strains, creating extensive databases cataloging gene activity in different tissues, as measured by messenger RNA accumulation. These data offer maps of trait expression that can be superimposed on maps of disease modifier genes. As is the case with nearly all scientific discoveries, this research builds on previous findings several years ago. Researchers at Case Western map three genes that modify the accumulation of pathological beta amyloid in the brains of a transgenic mouse model of Alzheimer's to large chromosomal regions, each containing hundreds of genes. The Case Western scientists used crosses between the B6 and D2 strains of mice, studying more than 500 progeny. Using the results from this study, researchers turned their databases of gene expression to the mouse model of Alzheimer's, looking for differences in gene expression that correlated with differences in disease susceptibility between the B6 and D2 strains. This intensive work involved writing computer programs that identified each genetic difference that distinguished the B6 and D2 genomes, then running mathematical correlation analysis, known as regression analysis, of each difference. Correlations were made between the genotype differences, B6 or D2, and the amount of messenger RNA product made from each of the more than 25,000 genes in a particular tissue in the 40 recombinant inbred mouse strains. These correlations were repeated 10 times to cover 10 tissues, the liver being one of them. A key aspect of this work was learning how to ask questions of the MASA data sets to glean information about the identities of heritable modifier genes. This was novel and, in a sense, groundbreaking work. Researchers were inventing a new way to identify modifier genes, putting all of these steps together and automating the process. They realized they could learn about how a transgene's pathogenic effect was being modified without studying the transgenic mice themselves. Researchers' gene hunt offered good matches, candidates for each of the three disease modifier genes discovered by the Case Western scientists, and one of these candidates, the mouse gene corresponding to a gene known to predispose humans carrying a particular variation of it to develop early onset Alzheimer's disease, was of special interest to the team. The product of that gene, called presenilin 2, is part of an enzyme complex involved in the generation of pathogenic beta amyloid. Unexpectedly, heritable expression of presenilin 2 was found in the liver but not in the brain. Higher expression of presenilin 2 in the liver correlated with greater accumulation of beta amyloid in the brain and development of Alzheimer's-like pathology. This finding suggested that significant concentrations of beta amyloid might originate in the liver, circulate in the blood, and enter the brain. If true, blocking production of beta amyloid in the liver should protect the brain. To test this hypothesis, researchers set up an experiment using wild-type mice, since they would most closely replicate the natural beta-amyloid-producing environment. Scientists reasoned that if brain amyloid was being born in the liver and transported to the brain by the blood, then that should be the case in all mice, and one would predict in humans too. The mice were administered imatinib, trade name Gleevec, an FDA-approved cancer drug, a relatively new drug currently approved for treatment of chronic myelogenous leukemia and gastrointestinal tumors. The drug potently reduces the production of beta amyloid in neuroblastoma cells transfected by amyloid precursor protein and also in cell-free extracts prepared from the transfected cells. Importantly, Gleevec has poor penetration of the blood-brain barrier in both mice and humans. This characteristic of the drug is precisely why researchers chose to use it. Because it doesn't penetrate the blood-brain barrier, they were able to focus on the production of amyloid outside of the brain and how that production might contribute to amyloid that accumulates in the brain, where it is associated with disease. The mice were injected with Gleevec twice a day for 7 days. Then plasma and brain tissue were collected, and the amount of beta amyloid in the blood and brain was measured. The findings: the drug dramatically reduced beta amyloid not only in the blood but also in the brain, where the drug cannot penetrate. Thus, an appreciable portion of brain amyloid must originate outside of the brain, and imatinib represents a candidate for preventing and treating Alzheimer's. As for the future of this research, researchers hope to find a partner and investors to move the work into clinical trials and new drug development. And now for the final segment of the show, famous quotes. Today, William Archer. I was unable to determine which William Archer is responsible for today's famous quote. So whichever one of you coined it, congratulations. And now for the quote from William Archer. Theocracy has always been the synonym for a bleak and narrow, if not a fierce and blood-stained, tyranny.
Are you ready, Bruce? Start walking.